You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Obermeyer. This is your host, Christine Miles, with my co-host today, Joe Reardon, Doyle Alliance, Denise Lance, Alternative Health, Matthew Shapiro from Obermeyer, Maureen Tucker, VSA, and Hank Boyer, Boyer Management. Hank, we have a terrific lineup. Would you give us a lineup of who's on the show today,
Boy,
please?
Some great folks. We're going to start off with Kareem Thomas, CFO of American Reading Company, followed by Craig Spangler, who's principal of Ballinger, then Bruce Folk, CEO and president of American Heritage Federal Credit Union, and finally Matthew Shapiro, managing partner of Obermeyer, Redmond, Maxwell & Hippel.
Great. Thanks, Hank. And it's my pleasure to introduce our first guest, Kareem Thomas, the CFO of the American Reading Company, better known as ARC. Tell us a little bit about American Reading Company, Kareem.
Well, first, Christine, thanks for having me and our esteemed panel. American Reading Company is an ELA, English Language Arts Solution Company, where we provide curriculum and materials as well as professional and leadership development for school districts across the country.
And how large or how small are you?
So we're a $75 million company with about 250 colleagues based in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, and throughout the country.
And tell us a little bit about you. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up right here in Philadelphia, part of my life in North Philadelphia, and then in West Mount Airy.
And how many brothers and sisters did you have growing up?
I have a twin brother, Salim, and I am the youngest by 5 minutes, which I'm reminded.
A whole 5 minutes. Now, twin brother, is that a fraternal or identical twin?
Fraternal.
Okay. So tell us a little bit more about him.
So my brother, Salim, has special needs. So I grew up in not only a household where I was reminded that I'm the youngest, but also balancing his ability to live a normal life.
Hank?
So what did mom and dad do for a living?
Yeah, so my dad, I affectionately say, was a public servant. He is retiring in 15 days from the Pennsylvania House of Representatives after a 30-year career. And my mother was a social worker.
That sounds like a lot of service orientation. How did that impact you growing up?
Yeah, so I grew up, my parents were not together, but both led service-led lives, and both educators, and, you know, instilled upon me that from an early age, to whom much is given, much is required, and that service is the key to all success.
Tell us a little bit more about that, to whom much is given, much more is required.
Yep, so we didn't live in a wealthy household. We lived in a household where both of my parents worked. And made sure that they could provide as much as possible for my brother and I. And so to whom much is given, meaning no matter what you're given, and this is an old scripture, no matter what you're given, much is required to give back. And so to keep the world a happy place and to just keep life going, you are blessed. And as a blessed person, you know, providing things for others and providing service for others that may not necessarily have the life that you had.
And that's what you live there at American Reading Company as the CFO.
I do, yes.
Kareem, can you tell me more, tell us more about your brother Salim, and what was it like growing up with a sibling, one sibling who had special needs?
Yeah, so Salim has a development lag, and so we are probably 20 years apart in where we are development. And so growing up with a brother with a learning disability, I was raised by my mother and my brother was raised by my dad. And so in that household, living separately, really just balancing Salim's desire to want to be just like his brother Kareem and others around us, but also being the protector and kind of the comforter for Salim when he faced challenges, you know, every day in life.
Kareem, what was the difference between, you lived with your mother, is that correct?
Yes.
What was the difference between the households? You talked a little bit about that in the green room, the mother versus your father's environment.
Yeah, so Salim and I are totally different. My mother was the loving, nurturing, it's okay to fail. And my father, being a lawyer and an elected official, was, you know, kind of push and be the best that you can be and don't let anything get in your way. So balancing that was, you know, okay to be emotional at home with mom, but being the strong, you know, nothing get in your way type guy with dad.
So how do you balance that at work in what you do?
Yeah. So within our company, so at the end of the day, I help kids read and I help teachers become better teachers. While my functional role as CFO, you have to not only be empathetic, but also understanding at the challenges that we face every day in education. And so how I balance that is, you know, being resilient in my desire and passion for kids to want to succeed, but also understanding that not all kids have an even playing field. So there's kids with autism that at our company, we help read on grade level and think on grade level. And there's kids that come from wealthy backgrounds who may not have the resources on a day-to-day basis to do the same. So balancing that and blending it.
You just used the word passion, which I think it comes through. And obviously there was a point, and you started out on a different career path, but there was a mentor that intervened and maybe set you on the path that leads you to where you are today. Could you talk about Dr. Blunt?
Yes. So Kathy Blunt. So I've been in banking for the last 20 years. I've been at American Reading Company for 7 months and very successful banker and leader here in Philadelphia. Most recently ran commercial banking for a large bank here in the city. And so I ran away from the service aspect of, you know, my upbringing because some despising of my dad's job, right? And so Kathy Blunt, who was my high school principal, taught me and told me that I'm going to make you the adult that I know you want to be and can be, and really just nurtured and gave me the tools to be successful. I wasn't the best student in school, but Kathy shared with me that if you apply yourself, the world is yours. And so, you know, now at American Reading Company, you know, having the ability to live what my passion has always been, that I kind of shot away.
Well, mentors can make a huge difference. Now, even your dad was push, as you put it. He was also very involved in community service, and you got involved at a very young age. You mentioned something about being 10 years old and being out at a rally with him. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Sure. So even though at 10 years old, my dad became a new elected official, prior to that, he was the CEO of a community development corporation. And so always been involved in North Central Philadelphia community. And so I remember at, you know, 10 years old doing drug rally marches where we were marching down Lehigh Avenue at 13 saying up with hope, down with dope. You know, I remember knocking on doors, passing out campaign literature, doing food banks at, you know, on Christmas when I would just want to be home and opening up gifts. So that was, you know, very early on in my life.
We've been talking about passion and where some of your drive comes from. Can you tell us a little bit about the role of faith in your life growing up?
Yeah, so I grew up at the Triumph Baptist Church here in Philadelphia, and faith played a huge role in my day-to-day. I was the chair of the youth usher board, was a youth usher leader, as well as the youth worship leader at Triumph, which is a large, historically black church here in Philadelphia. And I remember the day that I got ordained as a junior deacon when I was 17 years old. Pastor Hall said to me and on all of us that the devil is going to be after you like never before. And 3 days later, I found my mom dead. And so the faith of, you
know. Wait. I'm sorry. So you're 17 years old when you're ordained, and then at 18, your mom passed away suddenly?
Yep.
How did, I mean, obviously, traumatic experience, but how did your faith carry you through that?
It did, and it carried me through just understanding that God makes no mistakes. We often question our faith, and our faith is often tested. But as you go through trials and tribulations, understanding that, you know, joy will come in the morning.
How does that experience help you as you're helping, I think you said, not just as the CFO, but helping kids to read and teachers to teach? How does that experience help you?
Yeah, so it helps me understand and exhibit to our students that we interact with and our teachers that no matter what gets in your way, you can be the best of the best. I remember I was at a school in Cape Henlopen, Delaware, and I was at a classroom of autistic kids in first grade, and they were reading and writing on grade level, and that to me showed that no matter what your circumstances, if you're provided with the tools and resources to be successful, you can be successful at any age. And that's, you know, that's what helps me apply my day to day.
You described earlier in the green room that you're the emotional one, your brother not as emotional. And you said something very interesting, something about as a twin, you could feel his pain. How does that serve you well? That I'm sure that had its times when it was burdensome, but how does it serve you in your role?
I think it's helped with my empathy as well as my emotional intelligence and understanding people. You know, one of our guests shared about the ability to listen. And I think growing up in a house where you're pushed, but also where it's okay to be emotional and understanding, you listen more and you understand more, but you're not quick to judge. And that, you know, in my day-to-day is really just understanding where people are coming from and helping them get to where they want to be.
And what's the website address for American Reading Company?
AmericanReading.com.
And say that again for us?
AmericanReading.com.
And we've been speaking with Kareem Thomas, the CFO of the American Reading Company, that's also known as ARC. And what's the best part of your job at ARC?
The best part is when I get to go home and tell my son, my four-year-old, at the end of the day that daddy helped another kid read and another teacher be the best of the best.
Tremendous. Well, thank you for joining us. And don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. That's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
Hey, good job.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Christine Miles. It's my pleasure to introduce you to our next guest, Craig Spangler, principal at Ballinger. What is Ballinger, Craig?
Christine, thanks for having me. Ballinger is an architectural and engineering firm. We're located here in Philadelphia, about 225 people, and we serve the academic, healthcare, and corporate markets nationally.
And you said you're the oldest in the country? Tell us some more.
We're the oldest continually operating architectural and engineering practice starting in 1878, and we're in our fifth generation of owners.
Wow. And how long have you been involved?
I've been there for 23 years and 18 years as a principal.
Wow. And you said that you design culture. What's that got to do with buildings?
Well, every building obviously is housing whatever entity we're working on. I specialize on the academic side, and in the end, a culture is whatever institution is going to engage us. There are different entities within any academic scenario, and to that extent, we are looking at culture, and that becomes the basis for which we design upon.
You're painting that picture for the future.
That's correct.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Media, which is southwest of the city.
And did you have any brothers or sisters?
I had one sister who was 4 years older than me.
And she was pretty accomplished, wasn't she?
She was an excellent ballerina, yes, and she spent a lot of time here in the city and up in New York in her early life.
What was that like for you?
Well, I mean, obviously having a sibling was very important, but being 4 years older and her being away, I ended up being pretty much an only child for much of my my early childhood.
And how did that affect you?
I think, you know, I had to be self-reliant, had to find things to do by myself, and that was a part of me driving, you know, in the future.
Great. And what did mom do for a living?
My mom was a homemaker, and a great one at that.
How about your father?
My father was a management consultant.
And so what did you take from your mom and your dad? What characteristics?
So my mom was very compassionate, and my dad was a hard-driving entrepreneur.
And how does that combine in what you do today?
So the architecture business is, you know, quite complicated. We deal in very large projects, and obviously being able to drive hard through all the entities that we have to address in doing such buildings, but listening is a key aspect of what we do. And so to that extent, being compassionate and understanding and having empathy for the folks that we're engaging is important.
So Craig, my dad is an architect too, and I remember growing up and being on sites and building sites and things like that. Was there a point in your life where you remember being on a building site and that impacting you?
Yeah. So early on, my parents moved to Florida, and we ended up building a new house, and there was a contractor who had a street of houses that ranged from sort of small to large and had everything in between. That was extraordinarily fascinating to me, and was the first time I really thought about the nature of what buildings could be.
And did that make you want to be an architect at that point?
Oh, I think at that juncture, I was on that path. And certainly didn't fully appreciate it until I got into undergraduate school, but that was certainly what inspired me.
And what's changed about your understanding of architecture since
How creative it actually is. I sort of focused on the technical side of things when I was in high school, math and social studies and things like that, but I didn't really take on the creative aspect, and it was a really significant change in my life when I went to college and I really had to focus on creativity as the basis of architecture.
So were there any examples when you were younger of times that you were being creative during that ages 8 to 14?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I was so focused on the technical side that I didn't really appreciate the nature of creativity. My sister, certainly being a ballerina, was, you know, brought the arts into our life, but I was in music. But other than that, I really hadn't spent much time on the creative side.
So that was something that you were able to learn to acquire later in your career.
I certainly had to change my thinking in many, many ways. And it took me about a year to make that transition.
Craig, how does that help you as the principal with your clients? Because they probably have trouble seeing some things sometimes. Yeah. How does that help you?
Yeah, so certainly being able to translate folks' ideas into what a building is one of the hardest things to be able to communicate. Fortunately, technology at these times enables us to do that much quicker and easier, but to that extent, creativity is part of being able to express an idea and being able to be passionate about things.
Great.
I think it's really a neat concept to think about architecture as designing a culture of a building. Can you talk a little bit about the topics, the subjects you liked in school, and maybe how they influenced who you are today?
Surely. So architecture is both a creative, a technical, and business profession. And to that extent, math was really one of my focuses, and certainly that has been played really important in the context of running a business and dealing with all the structure and engineering that's associated with doing these buildings. Social studies really was a passion, and to that extent, dealing with culture was a connection, and being interested in what people do is really what has driven my success.
I wish they could see the smile, the listeners could see the smile on your face as you talk about the combining of those two things and what you do for a living. Joe?
I'm struck by, you mentioned your sister and kind of that only child dynamic that took on by her, how busy she was. But you described it earlier as the point in time where you were developing your skills as a listener, and maybe even described it as shyness. But and then you talked about your current role today and the importance of listening.
Yeah, surely. My sister was out front. She was performing all the time. I was sort of the younger child and was sort of behind the scenes to some extent. And I was a stutterer when I was actually young. And that was one thing that kind of made me shy because I was always reticent about being, publicly out there. My role now requires me to be out there in the public in significant ways, and I had to, again, make that transformation while I was trying to be creative. So, important transformation.
So, you mentioned you moved to Florida when you were in sixth grade, and there was another adult that was a key influence in your life.
We moved to Florida. So my father was going to take over my grandfather's business, and he was an extraordinarily amazing entrepreneur. Had started many businesses having emigrated from Poland, and every time I would see him, he would say push, 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 and it's embedded in my memory and really has been a sort of driver throughout my entire career.
What did you learn from him with that push, push, push?
Yeah, I think it's an endurance issue. I mean, you have to. Buildings that we do take somewhere between 5 to 8 years, and push, 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 and keeping ideas alive and keeping folks energized about it is an extraordinarily important thing.
So, Craig, what's the similarity between architecting a building and architecting a team?
Well, I mean, certainly architecture is a team sport, and there's so many people who go into building these buildings. In fact, thousands of people. And you're designing, and you've got to design an organization around which people are inspired to help, fulfill that particular strategy.
Craig, you actually, even though you were shy, you played sports, and you took what were the sports that you played growing up?
So I played football when I was in junior high, but wasn't sizable enough to continue that into high school. I did swimming, but where I excelled was skiing, and skiing was really an important aspect of being individual and standing out, and was sort of the first time I was really out front in a lot of ways.
And you took a leadership role.
I did. I was captain of our ski team.
And what did you learn from being the captain and taking that out in front role?
Yeah, well, certainly you've got to rally everybody, and you've got a team behind you, and that's a really important aspect of leading overall.
And And when you were a child, you also had some money-making activities.
Yeah, I mowed lawns and cleaned cars and did things like that around the neighborhood, and that was certainly an aspect of establishing relationships with adults. And
how did you get your customers?
Well, obviously, being in a tight-knit neighborhood was understanding and being with all the different folks around the neighborhood. Certainly, the kids that were had parents, and they were anxious for me to help them out.
I get the sense that you're quietly out in front with your people and your customers. Is that
I would
a fair
say
statement?
That's a probably good characterization.
Yeah, correct. Very humbly and quietly, yes. But nonetheless out in front and making a difference.
Correct.
What's the best part of your day?
So, you know, obviously we've got a large team, and seeing folks come together to create ideas is really an important aspect of what we do. And ideas are more important than hierarchy, and as a firm, we believe that as a core component of what we do. And seeing folks, you know, emerge over time and become exceptional leaders is something that we always enjoy.
Terrific. And what's your website address?
Our website is ballinger.com.
And we've been speaking with Craig Spangler, principal of ballinger.com. And you're listening to executiveleadersradio.com. And to learn more about our executive leaders, go to that website address. And we'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
Good job, man.
Thank you.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Christine Miles, with my co-host, Joe Reardon, Doyle Alliance, Nice Lance, Alternative Health, Matthew Shapiro, Obermeyer, Maureen Tucker, VSA, and Hank Boyer, Boyer Management. It's my pleasure to introduce our next guest, Bruce Folk, CEO and President of the American Heritage Federal Credit Union. Hi, Bruce. What is the American Heritage Federal Credit Union?
We're a nonprofit, not-for-profit financial institution owned by members. We have 180,000 members in this local area of Delaware Valley.
And how long have you been involved?
I've been there 40 years. I can't hold a job.
And you said you started with four employees, and how many employees do you have today?
We have almost 700 employees now working for me.
And how many branches did you have when you got started?
Started out one in North Philly. Now we have going on 38 branches.
Wow. And you said you also, as part of this, have a community outreach program. What's that called?
We have a foundation called the Kids and Hope Foundation, which I started back in 1996, and we raised $1.6 million for Children's Hospital's music therapy program.
Wow, fantastic. And just take us back now. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a small town called Percocet in Bucks County.
What was special about growing up in that town?
You know, you could walk the streets, and your neighbors would tell on you if you were bad, and quite a few phone calls probably went to my parents, but we also knew that we were safe there, and that was a really exciting town. It really was.
What did that do to you, having people surrounding you that way?
You know, it's nice that you have people care about you. That, you know, they know who you are. At least back then, they knew who I was, and that's the folk kids right there.
How many brothers or sisters do you have?
I have an older brother and a younger sister.
Ooh, you were the sandwich kid.
Yeah, I certainly was.
And so tell us a little bit about your older brother and younger sister. What was it like growing up with them?
It was a very competitive household because my brother and sister both were All-American swimmers, both in high school and in college. And I was the one that challenged my parents.
So you were sort of the family underdog. What did that do to you?
It made me want to achieve to prove myself out there.
So how do you help other people deal with that underdog situation?
I think I ingrain it in work and also in with my family too, that you got to work hard to help people out. You got to believe in yourself.
So you told us in the green room that you wanted to make a change in the community to help the underdogs, and something happened in a local community where you kept a branch when everybody else moved out.
We was in North Philadelphia. We were the only financial institution in North Philadelphia, and we stayed there, and we actually built a real modern high-tech branch, and that's where we're now seeing a change in the community.
So you've really been helping others build their wealth. Talk to us a little bit about what you did as a child, your first jobs, and what did you do with the money you earned?
I started working as shoveling snow probably around 8 years old, and I then went in mowing yards, local neighbors' yards, and then I worked for a local company when I was probably 14, sorting leather and at a hippie place.
What did you do with your earnings?
I saved it. I was a saver. I did not like to spend money. I always wanted to see my passport grow, and I was proud of that.
We talked a little bit earlier about your father. What did your father do for a living?
He was in an occupation called a huckster. And a huckster is a guy that goes out and sells produce to, in our case, our dad had specific customers that he would go to every week and deliver the food and produce and meats and butter. And
Did you go out with them?
Yes, I did. Whenever I could go out with dad, I would go out. But they were a lot of long hours. We'd start like at 4:30 in the morning, get home at 9 o'clock at night, and so.
And so, you strike me as a little bit of a huckster. Is there some huckster in you?
There's a lot of huckster in me. I like hustling.
What does that mean? What does that mean? There's some huckster in you.
Huckster means you're out there. You gotta push your product, get your product out there. Do people know it? You just can't sit there and expect people to walk in the door. And that's what the hucksters are about.
As a young boy, you recounted a story, or I guess an anecdote, about seeing your father coming down the driveway tired, exhausted from a long day, and the appreciation for the dollar that he had to earn. Seems like it connects very strongly with your current role.
You know, because my dad worked so hard, I was heartbroken sometimes. We weren't poor, but I was heartbroken because he was working so many long hours. I remember falling asleep when he was even praying on his knees at night, and it just broke my heart, and I just never wanted to be that way. But he really cared about people, and he'd give away free food to people that needed help.
You described your dad had some core values that he would talk about. What tell us what they were.
He said you believe in God, love your country, and love your family all together.
Well, I know that giving back has been really important to you. We've talked about some of your community outreach and things of that nature. What are some other ways that you give back, for example, your employees? And
well, the employees at American Heritage, I'm very fortunate, I have a great staff, that they want to do things to help in the community. We do Ronald McDonald House 5 times a year, the dinner's there. They raise money for books for kids. They raise 6,000, they got 6,000 books for Children's Hospital and other hospitals last week. They're the things that they've helped raise money for an orphanage over in Kenya that we support over there. And they raise a lot of money, help us raise a lot of money for Children's Hospital, our Kids and Hope Foundation.
It seems like you consider your employees to be part of a family. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely. I go by Bruce. I'm not Mr. We try to make sure every employee gets a birthday card and wish and decorates their desk every day if it's their birthday, and all the employees know who it is. And I just think that's really critical.
Bruce, you have been, I don't know if rescue is the right word, but you've been intervening from a pretty young age. What happened when you were about 10 years old? What did you do?
Well, I was kind of... I started a fire department in Percy of a bunch of young kids, almost like the Little Rascals. And
what was the inspiration for that?
Always wanted to be a fireman. I'm a volunteer fireman right today. That's probably what I want to be when I grow up, if I ever grow up. But I think we went up to the firehouse up there, and they had threw out their old helmets. We put them on ourselves, went down there, and I was president of the fire department. Every time the fire alarm would go off or the whistle would blow, we'd go up to the top of the barn and watch where the fire trucks would go.
I always say that firefighters run in the wrong direction. That's instinctually safe. So how are you helping others with your community foundation and with American Heritage? How are you running in the wrong direction to help them be more successful?
A lot of people will walk by people that are in need, and I will never ever walk by somebody that's in need. And I think it's ingrained in my staff that they're always looking for ways to help people out. They're always coming to me saying, hey, can we do this event?
So you're pretty vigilant, aren't you?
And that's what they tell me.
Yeah, pretty vigilant. And like, go ahead, Joe.
And that process, the competitive sports brother and sister, and you chose to be different, intentionally accepted or embraced being different as a musician and a iconoclast.
Oh, yeah. I had a rock and roll band I was in at 15 years old, and we played at the Selville Theater. And we had our fame for 3 minutes, and it was a great experience. Eclectic Cornucopia, famous band. That's what it's
called.
What
was special about being in a band?
You know what? It was a band of brothers, so we all got along good together, and we were there for the same thing.
Yeah.
To put music on.
So, and how does that serve you, that creative side?
I think I'm always thinking, every night I'm always thinking, what am I going to do the next day? Most of us here probably always think, what are we going to do the next day? I'm always trying to figure out, how can I help somebody tomorrow or today when I get up?
So why is it so important for you to help people?
It's because, you know what, that's the way I was brought up. And if I don't help somebody every day, I don't feel fulfilled. I really don't.
So you had said that you want to be remembered even more for the work in your community outreach program. Why?
I want to be remembered for our Kids in Hope Foundation, because I go down there and I see the kids that this helps, this program helps. It just makes me sometimes want to cry, but I know we're doing it for the right reasons. The Creighton will go on forever after I'm gone, and I want the Kids in Hope Foundation to go on forever.
Bruce, so much of what you do gives back to children. Is there a child in you that you wish had a gift when you were a child? Is there something, is there a connection there?
No, I don't think it is. I just think the children are so, they can't do what we can do. And they're sometimes helpless. And I saw that when I was in Kenya big times.
So what's the website address?
It's amhfcu.org.
And we've been speaking with Bruce Folk, CEO and President of the American Heritage Federal Credit Union, and we'll be back in a moment right after this break.
Thank you very much.
Want help building your business with help from this show's CEOs? Our CEOs can help you uncover more opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that. They've succeeded in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars, and some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. The same CEOs you've heard on the show for 10 years may be willing to help you build your business, uncover new opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. And some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Christine Miles. It's a pleasure to introduce my next guest, Matthew Shapiro, Managing Partner from Obermeyer. Hi, Matthew. What is Obermeyer?
Obermeyer is a full-service law firm right in downtown Philadelphia.
And how large or how small?
About 125 lawyers.
And what is your role at the firm?
I'm the managing partner.
Why did you become, or how did you become, the managing partner at Obermeyer?
Someone had to do it.
Is that right? Okay. Well, why don't we find out a little bit more about that in a moment. Take us back. Where did you grow up?
I grew up two blocks from the Art Museum here in Philadelphia.
And how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I have two younger brothers.
Two younger brothers. And where did you fall in the pecking order?
I'm the oldest.
The oldest child. What was it like being the oldest in your family?
Oh, I'm definitely an oldest. I am a relentless perfectionist.
A relentless perfectionist. Okay. And what did mom and dad do for a living?
My father's an architect and my mother's an occupational therapist.
Okay.
So you mentioned that besides growing up near the Art Museum, you also spent a lot of time growing up on Cape Cod. What was that all about?
I was fortunate enough to spend at least a month of every summer on Cape Cod. We would go up and get a little cottage that had no TV, it had no phone. My father would have to fly back and forth to keep his architectural practice running, but we went to the beach and we had a good time, and it was our family playing games.
And what did you like to do as a child?
I love to read, particularly when we were on Cape Cod and we were at the beach or we were at home with no TV. I love to read and I love to...
What kind of books?
I always liked detective books. I liked the Hardy Boys when I was really young. I liked Agatha Christie as I got older. I turned to like John le Carré and spy stuff.
So does that seem like maybe books that relate to the work that you do now somehow?
Well, there's certainly the kind of books where there's a question, a problem, and you watch the protagonist try and figure it out and understand what's going on and solve the problem.
Matthew, you said earlier in the agreement you loved words. Well, you loved the words in the books. What's that got to do with being an attorney or the managing partner?
I do love words. When I was young, I had a fantasy about being a novelist. I turned out not to be creative enough to do that, but I try to bring the creativity and the use of words and storytelling to my clients. You take on the client's story, and you have to tell the client's story to the court or to whoever you're dealing with to try to accomplish what the client needs accomplished.
Wow.
Matthew, you talked about your summers at Cape Cod, and your time there was different. You spent a lot of time with your family, and you felt very comfortable. How does that relate to how you interact with your clients and your employees today?
Well, again, Cape Cod was non-technical, no phone, no TV. And so you really had to focus in on people and relationships. And that's what I think I try to do with clients and with people in my firm. You try and get rid of all the distractions. You try to ignore the email beeping. You try to just ignore the phone and the things that are going on in the hallway. And you really try to focus in and listen, whether it's to a client or to someone in the firm who has an issue going on.
So you got your first job there at age 12. What was that?
My first job was actually in the donut shack, where I served up donuts and coffee to people early in the morning. But that didn't last very long because there was a deli next door. And the next door deli had a girl working in it, and they got rid of her like my second day that summer. And they put me in charge of the deli.
Because somebody had to do it, right?
Yeah, because somebody had to do it. And I had no idea what I was doing.
So what did you do? How'd you figure it out?
A lot of trial and error, and probably more error than anything else. I didn't know at first that I was supposed to order the produce. So I showed up for my second day, and we didn't have any tomatoes, lettuce, or onions to put on the sandwiches. And I had to figure out where the form was and how I had to fill out the form to make sure I had produce the next day.
So it sounds to me like your bosses allowed you to succeed. So how do you as a boss allow your people to succeed?
I like to find people and challenge them a little bit and put them beyond what they think they're capable of doing and say, hey, go do this. I find that particularly with associates. I have to choose when to send them to court, when to let them talk with opposing counsel. And I typically like sending them a little bit beyond what they think they're capable of, because I know they can do it.
And you had an experience as a baseball player, a young, three brothers in the house, lots of sporting activity, but not a very stellar career, but the audacity to pursue that beyond into high school?
I did. Well, I had two baseball experiences. The one baseball experience was on the good team, where I wasn't a very good player, and we were a good team. We won the city championship. And then the later baseball experience was on the worst team in the worst league, where I was far more of the star and had to carry the team. So that was a little bit of a learning experience.
So somebody had to do it again.
Somebody had to do it.
That seems to be a theme. You described that as a kid, again, you were very shy, liked reading, and you said that the school part, it came easy to you. But what about the social part?
No, social, and particularly in contrast to the school, I knew what to do. When I had to interact with other people, the difference between how easy school was and how hard it was trying to figure out what you were supposed to say to a girl, that, like, I didn't know what to do with that.
You know, it occurs to me that some of your associates are quite good at being lawyers, but they don't necessarily think about being in the business of law and how to navigate the social part of being a lawyer. Talk a little bit about maybe that gap and how you help fill it.
Yeah, we try really hard to teach our lawyers that they need to be in the minds of the clients, and the clients don't always care. In fact, they don't usually care so much about what the law is. They have a specific problem or a specific goal or a specific deal, and our job is to get them there. We have to listen to what they want, and we have to get them there. We don't have to explain to them all the technical stuff that goes with the law. We don't have to explain all the complicated legal arguments.
So you're really a mentor to your associates and partners as well.
I do try to be. There were mentors at this firm and all through my life who have been tremendously important to me. So I do try to be half as good as some of them were to me, to the people who are growing up here.
So even though you were in the deli and it was sink or swim, that's not really the approach.
You know what? I actually think a good mentor gives you a little bit of sink or swim. And if you look back at the mentors who were best in my life, they were the ones who frequently were toughest on me. The ones who a lot of people couldn't get along with because they didn't get the back pat or the outward, yeah, you did a really great job. But you kind of knew if they were still spending the time with you that they appreciated your potential.
And real quickly, you just tell us a little bit about your mom being an occupational therapist. How did that help you, just in a sentence or two?
So it helps me because my mother's job was to help people with special needs adapt to the world and figure out how to get along in the world. Whether that was, you know, being able to bring a fork to your mouth, being able to figure out how to get in and out of a chair, regular everyday things that a lot of us take for granted, that her job was to help kids, because she worked in a school, help kids figure out how to do those things so they could be independent.
It sounds like you're doing that both for your clients and for your partners and associates. And what's the website address for Obermeyer?
O-B as in boy, E-R-M-A-Y-E-R.com, Obermeyer.com.
All right, great. And Hank, can you give us a rundown of who's been on the show, please?
We've had a terrific group of guests here. We started off with Kareem Thomas, CFO of American Reading Company, followed by Craig Spangler, principal of Ballinger. Then we spoke with Bruce Folk, the CEO and president of American Heritage Federal Credit Union. And finally, just speaking with Matthew Shapiro, managing partner at Obermeyer.
And I want to thank our co-host today, Joe Reardon, Doyle Alliance, Denise Lance, Alternative Health, again, Matthew Shapiro, Obermeyer, Maureen Tucker, VSA, and Hank Boyer from Boyer Management. I'd like to thank my co-host for helping me develop our storyline, hopefully delivering you to our listening audience a great and entertaining and educational show. And I'd like to thank our listening audience, otherwise we wouldn't have a radio show. Please don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Have a great day. Bye-bye.